Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Samuel chapter 28. This is the chapter that tells us the story of Saul and the Witch of Endor. Our context is this. Saul has finished chasing David, flushed him out of Israel. David has fled to the Philistines. In chapter 27, our last chapter, we see how he has won over the confidence of the king of Gath, Achish, by pretending to attack Israel's enemies when actually he was attacking Achish's enemies. And so David is in Gath. Saul has left him alone because he can't cause him any harm over there in the land of the Philistines. Plus, Saul can't get him over there in the land of the Philistines because he can't attack his enemy. And so now the Philistines are going to decide to attack Israel. So we start now in chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. Now it came about in those days that the Philistines gathered their armed camps for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, "Know assuredly that you will go out with me in the camp, you and your men." David said to Achish, "Very well, you shall know what your servant can do." So Achish said to David, "Very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life." Now, why did the Philistines gather their armed camps to fight against Israel? Here's some possible motives. Samuel had died. They've lost their spiritual leader. David had been disgraced and exiled. They've lost their best military commander. Saul had been acting so erratically, the Israelites were dissatisfied with Saul. And I'm sure the Philistines knew that people were not happy in Israel. Perfect time to go get them. Now, Achish, the king of Gath, tells David, "No, assuredly that you will go out with me to fight against Saul." Now, Achish could have been very comfortable with David and not worried and said, "No worry, David, you're going to go out with me." Or he could have been suspicious of him. "Know that you're going to go out. I'm going to test you to see whether you're going to fight against your fellow kinsman." But whatever Achish's motives were, Achish had put David in a bad spot. Here was David's dilemma. If he fought with the Philistines, he would be attacking the country he loved, Israel. If he refused to fight with the Philistines, the refusal would make David odious in the eyes of Achish, his protector. So David was between the rock and the hard place here. It's ironic that David's attempt to deceive Achish had put him in this bad spot. David had already made it sound like he'd already attacked the Israelites. That's from the last chapter, you recall. 1 Samuel 27:10, for example, Achish said, "Where have you made a raid today?" And David said, "Against the Negev of Judah, against the Negev of the Jeremelites," that was a clan of the tribe of Judah, "and against the Negev of the Kenites." The Kenites were a tribe that was long loyal to the men of Israel. And so it looked like David just lied to Achish and said, "I'm attacking your enemies." And so Achish says, "Well, good, you've done such a good job. Let's go attack them again." Well, David was in a bad spot. He was chased by Saul. He was undercover, hiding in Ziklag, which was a dependency of Gath, of Achish, pulling off this great deception that he's attacking Achish's enemies when he's actually attacking the deception that he was attacking Achish's enemies when actually he was attacking Achish's friends. And so now the gig is up. And we're going to see how God's going to get David out of this later, but right now he's in bad shape. So Achish said to David, "Very well," in verse 2, "I will make you my bodyguard for life." Now, that could be because Achish was suspicious of David, wanted to keep him close. Could be he was showing David honor for fighting with the Philistines against the Philistines' enemies, but it could be suspicion of David. If David is Achish's bodyguard, Achish can keep his eye on David. Could be both. He wanted to honor him, he wanted to keep his eye on him. Now, there's a problem here. The last time David was in Gath, that was when he had just fled Nob after taking some bread there and having to flee Israel. Nob right north of the Mount of Olives, and he headed west to Gath. And the counselors of Achish started being suspicious of David, started suspecting him. And so David pretended like he was a madman so that Achish would say, "I'm not worried about this guy, he's crazy." And then David got out of Gath. Well, now he's gone from that to being bodyguard, and the question is how is that possible? Why would Achish do something like that? Well, here's the solution to that problem. Insanity back then was attributed to spirit possession. A lot of times, even today, it is. And the spirit could come and go. And David is obviously acting sane now. He's done nothing to repeat his performance of dribbling on his beard and scribbling on the wall. So Achish had no fear in appointing David because it was temporary insanity that afflicted him before. He's doing nicely now. Now, of course, Achish is probably thinking, this is great that I've got such a great military commander fighting against Saul. He's very valuable to me. I might not trust him completely, but I'm going to keep my eye on him and see if he will really do me a great military favor. Now, David says, very well, you know what your servant can do. Now, he might be blustering there, trying to buy time, as John Gill suggests, saying, okay, I'll go fight with Saul. I'll try to figure out what to do later on, see if I can get out of this mess. But right now, he's quite at a loss as to what to do, and so he's just playing along with the scheme here. Some commentators, Clark, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, Gill, say that David is speaking double talk. He's saying, very well, Achish, you'll know what your servant can do against you, Achish. You're going to know. You're going to know what I can do by turning on you in the battle. Well, whatever he meant. We go on down to verse 3, 1 Samuel 28. Now, Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. We had seen that in a previous chapter. And Saul had removed from the land those who were mediums and spiritists. Now, why is this little historical detail thrown in here? Well, the reason that it mentions that Samuel was dead is because the story of the Witch of Endor is about to come, and Samuel needs to be dead so he can be called up by the Witch of Endor, or else the story would make no sense. So this is just a preface to the story. Another possible reason that is mentioned is because this helps explain why the Philistines were so anxious to attack now, because Samuel was dead and they had lost their spiritual leader. Perhaps, but I don't think so. I think the real reason is just because it's setting up the story of the Witch of Endor, especially since the last part of verse 3 says, and Saul had removed from the land those who were mediums and spiritists. And that will also help explain the story of the Witch of Endor, because she was a medium and a spiritist. Saul had removed them, but nonetheless he goes to see one. Now, here's a question. Why did Saul banish the spiritists, the mediums, from the land of Israel? Well, here's some options. It could have been Samuel told him to, and he listened to Samuel. Could be that Saul thought that his evil spirit that David had to play the harp in front of, Saul thought that his evil spirit was somehow instigated by the mediums because they were dealing with the occult arts, with demons. It could be that Saul banished the mediums to show a hypocritical zeal for the true religion of Israel. Now, his hypocrisy is really illustrated by the story of the Witch of Endor. He banishes witches and then he goes to a witch for advice. Such a hypocrite. Well, Saul's not exactly your most exemplary character you'll find in the Bible. He was a murderer. He murdered 85 priests of Nob. Now, the scriptures clearly say that mediums or spiritists, i.e. witches, are illegal. Leviticus 19:31, do not turn to mediums or spiritists. Do not speak them out to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. Exodus 22:18, you shall not allow a sorceress to live. Well, Saul banished them. He didn't execute them like he was supposed to. He banished them. Saul never did anything properly when it came to the law or when it came to a directive from Samuel the prophet. We turn now to 1 Samuel 28, verse 4. So the Philistines gathered together and came and camped in Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel together, and they camped, Israel camped in Gilboa. So we look at the map, we go north from Gibeah, from Gath, and from the land of Benjamin, we go up to Manasseh, and we go to Gideon's old stomping grounds, the valley of Jezreel, that valley that runs around the Kishon River, which runs northwest to southeast from Carmel on the northwest coast of Israel down to the Jordan Valley. Right down as the Valley of Jezreel gets toward the Jordan Valley, we see all the places that Gideon hung out. The Spring of Harod, Mount Moreh, which is where the troops of Gideon mustered, and then about 5-6 miles south of that's the Spring of Harod, where Gideon looked out on the camp of the Philistines in order to take his 300 men to beat them. The town of Jezreel is on the southern edge of the Jezreel Valley there. Bethshan, which was later by the Romans called Scythopolis, Bethshan, where Saul and Jonathan were killed, is right at the end of the eastern end of the Jezreel Valley. So all this is the area where this story is going to take place. Now, Shunem is right on the western side of Mount Moreh, on the plain below that little hill called Mount Moreh, M-O-R-E-H. That was prominent in the story of Gideon. And Endor is on the northwest side of Mount Moreh. Now, as you go about 10 miles south across the Valley of Jezreel and across the little ridge of hills that's the southern edge of the Valley of Jezreel, you get to Mount Gilboa. So looking at the map, Mount Gilboa is about 10 miles due south of Endor, where the witch was from. Endor is about 3 miles, maybe 4 miles, to the northeast of Mount Moriah, and Shunem is to the west of Mount Moriah, on the west side of it. So Saul, to get from Mount Gilboa, where the Israelites were camped, to go to the witch of Endor, he had to go straight north across the Valley of Jezreel, and then he would have to go to the east of Mount Moriah, which would shield him from the Philistines who were on the other side, the western side of Mount Moriah, and then Samuel would be at Endor. Now, he did this at night, as we'll see later, and that's how he pulled that off. I said that Shunem was in the tribe of Ephraim. I made a mistake. It's in the tribe of Issachar, as John Gill points out. This is the famous hometown of Elisha's Shunammite woman. You remember the story of the Shunammite woman? So we go now to 1 Samuel chapter 28, verses 5 through 7. When Saul saw the camp of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. When Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. Then Saul said to his servants, "Seek for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And his servants said to him, "Behold, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor." Now Saul saw the camp of the Philistines by looking out from Mount Gabor across to Shunem. He had a good view from up there on the mountain. His heart trembled when he saw it. Why is Saul so afraid? Saul is a man who is living in fear because he's abandoned God. People who abandon God generally live in fear. He would have been afraid because of the large size of the Philistine army. Perhaps he was afraid because of the poor state of his own army. But he's not acting like a brave man here. John Gill speculates that perhaps Saul is contemplating that this time David's going to be coming after him instead of Saul going after David, like we spent several chapters describing down there southeast of Hebron in the wilderness, when David finally decided to quit being chased and he moved over to the Philistines to the west. Well, Saul had quit chasing David, and now David's chasing him. I'm sure Saul knew that David had apparently gone over to the Philistines. But at any rate, whether he was thinking about that or not, he was thinking about the Philistines, and he's scared. Saul was. So Saul inquires of the Lord. This has got to be a superstitious fear, foxhole religion. People always call on God when they're scared. Not always, but a lot of times they do. The Lord did not answer him. And why is that? Because Saul had sunk himself into sin. That's why God didn't answer him. Either by dreams or by Urim. That's the Urim and Thummim. Of course, that had been taken, the ephod with the breastplate, and presumably with the Urim and the Thummim in the breastplate, had already been taken by the surviving priest, Abiathar, who had not been slaughtered by Saul at Nob, and who had gone over to David. Some people speculate that Saul actually had another ephod made, had another breastplate made, put a new Urim in it, and then appointed another priest besides Abiathar to consult the new Urim. Or it could just mean God didn't answer him by Urim because the Urim wasn't there. It had been taken away by Abiathar. It's not really clear. And prophets certainly didn't talk to him, even though there was a school of prophets at Naoth, which is right north of Ramah, where Samuel had his school of prophets. They didn't help Saul. Why would they? They're enemies of Saul. Saul is an enemy of God and his prophets. So Saul has no one left to turn to. He's looking for supernatural help, and so when you don't have any help from God, who do you go to? The devil. So he goes to a witch. Now this place, Endor, which I said was 3-5 miles to the northeast of Mount Moriah, there north of the Valley of Jezreel, it means, according to Easton's, the Fountain of Dor. Endor is the Fountain of Dor, translated means of the age, whatever that means. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it. It's translated as the Fountain of the Circle, so apparently people don't know how to translate it. The Fountain of the Circle, Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, means that it is called that because a circle is being constantly affected by magicians or used by magicians. I don't know about that. But at any rate, Easton says that Endor is a place in the territory of Issachar. It's near the scene of the great victory which was gained by Deborah and Barak over Sisera and Jabin. To Endor, Saul resorted to consult one reputed to be a witch on the eve of his last engagement with the Philistines. A little foreshadowing here. Saul's about to get killed. Endor is identified with the modern village of Endor. Now remember, Jameson Fawcett Brown writing in the late 1800s. It is identified with the modern village of Endor, a dirty hamlet of some 20 houses, or rather huts, most of them falling to ruin on the northern slope of Little Hermon, about 7 miles from Jezreel. That's the town of Jezreel. We go now to 1 Samuel 28:8. Then Saul disguised himself by putting on other clothes, and went, he and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, "Conjure up for me, please, and bring up for me whom I shall name to you." Very polite. Why did Saul wear other clothes? One reason was so that the witch wouldn't know that he was the king. Well, I ask there, why would Saul care if the witch knew he was a king or not? Well, here's a possible answer to that. Saul would know that witches would be frightened of him. After all, he had recently banished them from the kingdom, as we'll see in a minute. He had banished them from the kingdom, and so naturally a medium's going to be afraid of him, so he had to disguise himself. There's another reason why he disguised himself with other clothes. It would be shameful for the king of Israel to go to a witch instead of turning to the Lord. So Saul did not want his own army to know what he was up to, as John Gill says. So Saul took off either his royal robes or his military clothes, depending on what he was wearing at the time, put on the clothes of a common peasant, and went to see his witch. Of a common peasant or a common soldier, perhaps, and he goes to see his witch. He goes at night, so the nighttime as well as the eastern flank side of Mount Moriah hid Saul as he went up to Endor. And he says, "Please bring up for me whom I shall name to you." He's asking for a specific person. It's going to be, and of course, he's preparing to name Samuel. Now, one might wonder, why Saul doesn't ask the witch directly to tell him the news. In other words, go consult a spirit and let me know who's going to win. Well, Saul must have remembered that Samuel's prophecies were always correct and that he was a famous prophet. So he wants the best, even though he knows that Samuel has turned his back on him and abandoned him already, but he's still going to call Samuel up. He's scared, Saul is, and he's not acting too rationally. We go now to verse 9, 1 Samuel 28. But the woman said to him, "Behold, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off those who are mediums and spiritists from the land. Why are you then laying a snare for my life to bring about my death?" Now, why did the woman show reluctance to call up a spirit for Saul? Well, it is one of two reasons. Option number one is she knew that this visitor was some sort of an important man because of his large stature, his elegant speech, and his bearing. A king, you know, Saul's a king. He's going to act like a king. And if she doesn't know that he was the king, she would have thought that this impressive man would probably know of Saul's previous banishment of mediums and would turn her in if she gave a prophecy. That's one option. Or option number two, she knew that it was Saul that was talking to her. How would she know? Well, because of his extraordinary stature, the deference Saul's attendants were probably paying to him, the servants that came with Saul up to the witch at Endor, the easy distance of Endor from the Israelite army. I'm sure she would have heard of the fact that the Israelites were mustered down there at Mount Gilboa. That's not far away. And then later, Saul proposes to call up Samuel, who's the chief prophet of Israel, which is a natural thing for the king of Israel to do. And also in verse 10, Saul says, "Don't worry, I'm not going. You will receive no punishment." Well, how can an ordinary person promise such a thing? Well, I guess you could say they won't rat on the woman, won't tell the government officials about her witchly activities. However, despite all those factors that might make us think that she knew it was Saul, there's a problem with that. If we read verse 12, three verses later, we read this: "When the woman saw Samuel, she screamed, and then she asked Saul, 'Why did you deceive me? You are Saul.'" It sounds like it was only after seeing Samuel's apparition that she realized that she was talking to Saul. But she could have known, and then at that point when Samuel's apparition appeared, then she let her knowledge of Saul be known only at that point. In other words, she could have hid it from Saul, and then all of a sudden she says, "Okay, I know who you are, Saul." So it's really not clear whether she knew or not. I don't think it really matters too much one way or the other, but at any rate, she tells this man, who she may or may not think is Saul, she says, "Why are you then laying a snare for my life to bring about my death?" She thought that her potential client was trying to lay a trap for her, that he was planning to inform on her after she delivered her services. We go now to 1 Samuel 28, verse 10. "Saul vowed to her by the Lord, saying, 'As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing.'" Now, isn't it ironic that Saul is swearing by the God of Israel, "As the Lord lives, as Yahweh lives, just as he was about to consult a witch. One would think that Saul might consider that the God he was swearing to might be unhappy that he was talking to a witch. We go now to 1 Samuel 28, verses 11 and 12. Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" She's assured now that she's not going to get in trouble. Probably thinking, "I can make some money here." "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." Well, in verse 11, the woman says, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" Adam Clark says that she's thinking, "I need to know the person my familiar spirit is going to impersonate." That's what mediums do. They get demons to come back and impersonate the dead. Adam Clark says that mediums make no claim to actually bring departed spirits back. I don't know what he means by that, because they make that claim all the time. But what he means is they make no claim to themselves. They know that they're dealing with demons that are impersonating dead people. Unless they're fake mediums, of course, which they're using tricks. But if they're a true medium with a familiar spirit, they're talking to demons. And so she needs to know how to get this demon to imitate whoever this man wants to be called up. Now, Saul says, "Bring up Samuel for me." Now, this is quite ironic that Saul would ask for Samuel. He had been estranged from Samuel for years. Why would Saul think that God would use Samuel to speak to Saul through a witch? After all, God had already refused to speak to Saul through prophets, dreams, and the Urim. And so now Saul thinks, I'll go get Samuel. The live prophets won't speak for me. I'll get a dead prophet. It's sort of pathetic, really. It's quite tragic that Saul was trying to do this. Albert Barnes, quoting a Dr. Trench, Dr. Trench says this, quote, "All human history has failed to record a despair deeper or more tragic than this. Who, having forsaken God and being of God forsaken, is now seeking to move hell. And infinitely guilty as he is, assuredly there is something unutterly pathetic in that yearning of the disanointed king to change words with the friend and counselor of his youth, Samuel. And if he must hear his doom, to hear it from no other lips but his." Yeah, that's nice. "You're going to die. Well, at least the person who told me is my old friend, who's repudiated me." Now in verse 12, the witch saw Samuel and she cries out with a loud voice. Now, why would she do that? Well, first of all, it's obvious she didn't expect Samuel. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But why did she wait until she actually saw Samuel, or the spirit imitating Samuel? Why did she cry out at that point, "You are Saul"? What was it about that spirit that came up that made her all of a sudden recognize Saul or acknowledge her knowledge that it was Saul? If she already knew, and if she didn't know, why would she then recognize it at that time when Samuel was called up? What did Samuel being called up have to do with her saying, "You are Saul"? Well, here's some options. Option number one, Samuel made a gesture of reverence to Saul. When he came up, maybe he genuflected to the king. That's Poole's suggestion. I don't think so. Maybe Samuel, when he was called up, the first thing he does when he sees Saul, he says, "Hey, Saul." He mentions Saul's name. I think that's a little bit more reasonable. That would be either if Samuel is the real Samuel or whether it's a demon. The Cambridge Commentary and Colin Delitzsch say that the reason she realized it was Saul here, if she didn't know beforehand, was because she was in an, quote, intensified perception in a state of clairvoyance. Matthew Poole says that it was the demonic spirit who had raised Samuel. I guess Poole thinks there was a demon involved and the true Samuel involved at the same time. I don't know, but he's saying that the demonic spirit told the witch as she was in her demonic trance. Well, it could be either any of those, but here's another interesting option. She lied about seeing Samuel. She pretended excitement when she said, "Why have you deceived me, Saul?" She knew it was Saul from the beginning. Assuming that, I've already mentioned the reasons why she might have thought it was Saul, his tall stature, the closeness of the army, and so forth. And so when this man said it was Samuel who he wanted to call up, well, who else would want to call up Samuel but Saul? And so she decided, "Okay, I'm just don't pretend anymore. Saul, I know who you are." Well, whatever was going through her mind, and again, it's hard to read between the lines, but we do know this. When the woman saw Samuel, she was obviously surprised. She wasn't expecting to see someone claiming to be Samuel. Kyle and Delitzsch say that the reason is that she knew she couldn't conjure up dead people's spirits. All mediums know that. They're using demons. And so she was surprised to see the actual Samuel there, if you assume it's the actual Samuel. But Kyle and Delich say, well, no, this was a demonic apparition, but it was different than most demonic apparitions. It was apparently more stark, more apparent, more real. Well, I don't know why she was surprised, but she was surprised. And she says, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. Now, again, I've already said this, but again, the options here is she was actually deceived by Saul and didn't know it was him until Samuel appeared. Or she was just now letting on that she was on to Saul's ruse about who he was. And if she was actually deceived by Saul, she would have had to be clued into who he was by the demon or Samuel as he came up. And that apparition would have tipped her off to the fact that it was Saul she's speaking to. We go down to 1 Samuel 28, verses 13 and 14. The king said to her, do not be afraid, but what do you see? And the woman said to Saul, I see a divine being coming up out of the earth. He said to her, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he is wrapped with a robe. And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and did homage. The king, Saul, says to the witch, don't be afraid. Afraid of whom? Afraid of me, Saul? Or afraid of the spirit she's about to call up? I'm not sure what he means there. I think he's referring, don't be afraid of me. Because he just said in the previous verse, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. So no punishment, don't be afraid. I think that's what she's saying. And why would she be afraid of the spirit coming up? She calls him up all the time. What do you see? Now, why didn't Saul not be able to see the demon or the apparition of Samuel? Well, here's some options. It could be because the woman was placed between Saul and the apparition, and he just couldn't see because of her. Or it could have been she was in another room performing her black arts. The pulpit commentary denies that option, although many other commentators say that's possibly what happened there. It could be because Saul may have been in an attitude of prostrate homage, and that explains why he could not see the apparition as it came up. At the very end of verse 14, it says Saul bowed with his face to the ground and did homage, and so he's got his face on the ground, his nose in the dirt, and saying, hey, lady, what do you see? Hey, witch, what are you seeing there? I'm scared to look. Well, that could be. It could be she surrounded herself with the smoke of incense, and he couldn't see. She's trying to make it spooky. But at any rate, he couldn't see at first. She answers, I'll tell you what I see. I see a divine being coming out of the earth. Now, that's the NASB translation. It's Elohim, gods. I see gods coming out of the earth. KGV actually translates it that way as gods. John Gill says that it's, well, here's some options as to what she saw, this divine being. It could be a great human being, as John Gill says, quote, a great personage, one of a majestic form, like the gods or judges and civil magistrates. You recall in the Old Testament, judges are called little g gods. So she's saying, oh, I'm seeing something like a god coming up here. Now, Samuel Clark's got a real interesting option. Off the wall, in my opinion. He says that what she is seeing is an angel that preceded the appearance of the real Samuel. Here's what Clark says, quote, this seems to have been a second apparition. She cannot mean that she had seen gods ascending out of the earth, and these gods were like an old man with a mantle. The angelic appearance first mentioned prepared the way for Samuel, and the whole was done so as to show to the woman that her heart had not prevailed in the present instance, and that what was now taking place was wholly independent of her incantations. Well, that is one highfalutin speculation, Dr. Clark. Two apparitions. An angel first saying, Samuel's coming, and not because of you, witch. I don't think so. The pulpit commentary says that when she saw gods coming up, that this was a generalized grand supernatural experience. As that commentary says, quote, as the participle is plural, she does not mean God, nor is it was a single appearance as the rendering little g gods, plural, correct. What she means is that she saw some grand supernatural appearance rising out of the ground, which she calls a god in a general way without attaching any very exact meaning to the term. And that's good enough for me. Now, at this point, after the witch says he's an old man wrapped in a robe, Saul knew that Samuel was an old man wrapped in a robe, and so he says in verse, the text says in verse 14, Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bows down. Now, here's the big debate here. He knew it was Samuel, but was Saul correct? Was it really Samuel? The two big camps on this interesting theological issue may be defined as follows. Camp number one says it was really Samuel, that was called up. Camp number two says, no, it was a demon imitating Samuel. I'm going to report, you decide. Commentators split all over the place on this. I've got my ruthers. I'll let you know at the end. First of all, here are arguments in favor of the apparition being Samuel and not a demon impersonating Samuel. These are arguments mainly from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. First of all, the medium was obviously surprised. She would not have been surprised if the apparition had been a demon. She's called up many demons before. Why would she be surprised? She's used to her familiar spirits impersonating people. Well, this is something different, and it was different because it was the real Samuel. Well, cutting against that argument, and I think that's a fairly strong argument, actually, but cutting against that is that this demonic impersonation may have been different than the others, maybe a little clearer, a little starker, maybe looking exactly like Samuel. Another argument that it's truly Samuel and not a demon is that the apparition appeared before the woman had a chance to use the demons to practice her black arts. But I don't know how you can infer that from the text. If you go back and read it, it says in verse 11, Saul says, bring up Samuel for me when the women saw Samuel. I mean, you could say, okay, it doesn't say that she did any incantations or black arts right there. Just Saul says, bring up Samuel, and boom, she sees Samuel. So it must be the real Samuel, not a demon Samuel, because the woman didn't use magic to call up the demon. Well, the problem with that, you can't prove that from reading that. It just could mean the incantations were left out, were understood. If a medium is going to call up spirits, she's got to do her incantations. That's a weak argument. The argument that says that the apparition appeared before the woman had a chance to practice her black arts, therefore the apparition was not called up by a demon, therefore it was the real Samuel. Here's a third argument that it's the correct, real, true Samuel, the apparition's confident prediction that Saul and his army were definitely going to be defeated. Well, whoop-de-doo. I mean, you know, anybody could have predicted that. I don't think that proves that it was the real Samuel. Here's reason number four. If it was a demon, why didn't the author of 1 Samuel just say so? This is my idea. It would have been nice, but he didn't, so that leaves open the possibility, at least, that it's actually Samuel. In fact, reason number five, that it's real, the true Samuel, the text explicitly says it was Samuel. 1 Samuel 28, verses 15 and 16. Then Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Verse 16, chapter 28. Samuel said, why did you ask me? 1 Samuel 28, 20. Then Saul immediately fell full length upon the ground and was very afraid because of the words of Samuel. Not the words of a demon, but the words of Samuel. That's probably the strongest argument right there, but I must say that it could just mean Samuel, i.e. Samuel in quotation marks, in air quotes. Samuel, in other words, Samuel stands for the apparition, the demon who is looking like Samuel. Well, now let's look at arguments in favor of the apparition being a demon impersonating Samuel and not Samuel himself. Now, there's another argument that the medium could have been faking all this, using somebody dressed up like Samuel. I was surprised that some commentators mentioned that. Gill mentions it. No, I don't think so. I don't think there's any way somebody could have faked all this. So let's now look at the arguments in favor of the apparition being a demon. Argument number one, why would God use this divinely illegal method to communicate with Saul? God had already refused legal methods to talk to Saul, the dreams, the prophets, the Urim. He says, I'm not going to talk to you, Saul. And oh, by the way, I will talk to you through medium. Does that make any sense? Reason number two, why this is a demon. It would be very easy for a demon to impersonate the well-known age figure in dress of Samuel. Option number three, Saul didn't actually see the figure. He had to ask the witch, what is his form? If the apparition was actually Samuel, Samuel would have seen him. And wouldn't it have been just as likely that the apparition would appear directly to Saul without using the illegal means of a witch? But Saul didn't see the figure. So that's argument number three. Saul didn't see the figure. He would have if it had been Samuel. Reason number four, why it's said to be a demon and not the actual Saul. The confident prediction of Saul's coming defeat would not be hard to make. A demon could easily predict that. Common knowledge of Israel's military situation could have told one that. Either the familiar spirit or the witch, if she's faking the whole thing, would easily know what was about to happen, so big deal. Of course, she's not faking the apparition of Samuel now, but she could have been thinking about doing that before Samuel shows up, or the fake Samuel shows up. Option number five, reason number five, why this is a demon and not the real Samuel. Why would Samuel come up from the earth rather than descend from heaven? I mean, I think it's demons that come from below, right? And departed saints come from above. That's John Gill's idea. Option number six, the apparition accepted worship and homage from Saul. Remember, Saul's laying down on the ground with his nose in the dirt. Not even angels would take worship from people. But cutting against that argument, you can give honor to a prophet without worshiping the prophet. And besides, the text says Saul gave homage. It didn't say that Samuel accepted the homage. It just said that Saul gave the homage. And so I don't think that's a good argument in favor of the apparition being a demon. Option number seven. Reason number seven why this is a demon. No witch has the power to disturb a departed saint in heaven. Well, you might say, okay, well, the witch doesn't have the power to do that, but it wasn't the medium who raised Samuel. It was God himself who raised Samuel in order to give Saul a talking to. And so God just sort of intervened in this demonic activity to give Saul a stern message. And I've got no problem with that. But it still just seems strange that a witch could bring down somebody who's already in heaven enjoying the presence of God, the beatific vision of eternally in perfect bliss, and also has got to come down here and look at all this garbage on earth, including a war that's about to happen. Reason number eight why this is probably a demon and not the real Samuel. The apparition doesn't mention that consulting a medium was a capital offense. In fact, it was one of the reasons that Saul was going to die, because he consulted a medium. Now, the real Samuel would have probably mentioned this. A demon is probably not going to mention this, since the demon is appearing through the efforts of a medium. We read in 1 Chronicles 10:13, "So Saul died for his trespass which he committed against the Lord, because of the word of the Lord which he did not keep, and also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it." Saul died for doing this. He was doing something so wrong that he died for it. And God says he died for it. And we're to believe that God somehow uses this medium to get Samuel up to talk to Saul, and that apparition of Saul doesn't even mention to Saul that, hey, what you're doing deserves execution? Seems unlikely to me. Reason number nine why it's the real Saul. Why it's a demonic Saul, excuse me. Saul is said in verse 19 to be with Samuel the next day in heaven. Well, it doesn't say in heaven. It says, well, let me read verse 19. Drop down and read it. "Moreover, the Lord will also give over Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. Therefore, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me." Well, Saul is going to be with Samuel in heaven. The murderous, medium consulting, lying, rebellious Saul is going to be with Saul. Samuel is going to be with Samuel in heaven. I don't think so. After all his manifold and unrepented for sins, he's going to be in heaven. Sounds to me like he's more likely going to be with the apparition in hell. Reason number 10 why this apparition is probably a demonic apparition. Saul's sons, in verse 19, are going to be the next day with Samuel. This is a weak argument, but it says in verse 19, the apparition says, "Tomorrow you and your sons will be with me," but actually not all of the sons were with the departed Samuel, because three of Saul's sons survived the battle, which would make this quote-unquote Samuel's prophecy a false one. And a true prophet of God would not make a false prophecy like that. Well, let's throw that argument out, because verse 19 doesn't say all of Saul's sons would be in heaven. It just said your sons will be in heaven. It might be implied, but it's not stated, that all the sons would die. So you can't prove that this is a false prophet. Not conclusively. You can suggest it, maybe. Next reason, reason number 11, why this is a demonic Samuel that Saul is looking at now. Samuel, the fake Samuel, the demonic Samuel, made a false prediction as to the timing of the death of Saul and his sons. He said in verse 19, "Tomorrow you will be with me, and your sons will be with me tomorrow." Well, the battle was not tomorrow. This is according to John Gill. He said the battle occurs several days later. Now, I haven't checked Gill out on that yet. I'm just taking his word for it. Another false prophecy. Here's argument number 12, that it's a demon and not the real Samuel. No witch has the power to disturb a departed saint in heaven. Remember, in verse 15, Samuel complains to Saul, the apparition complains to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Since when is it? You're in heaven, and you're enjoying the face of God, the presence of God forever and ever and ever. You're in total bliss, and all of a sudden, knock, 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 excuse me, Mr. Samuel, we've got a messenger here. You need to go back down to the earth. Please. I just don't believe that. Reason number 13 why this is a demonic counterfeit of Samuel and not the real Samuel. Samuel had quit answering God in life. Why would he answer Saul in death? Changed his mind while he's up there in heaven? Well, you see here that, well, I said I'd report it objectively. I guess I didn't. I guess I sort of tipped my hand here to say that I believe that this was a demon that the witch is talking to. I'm not going to stand on the hill and defend it to the death, but I really do think it was a demon. We go now to 1 Samuel 28, verse 15. Then Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" And Saul answered, "I am greatly distressed, for the Philistines are waging war against me, and God has departed from me and no longer answers me, either through prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have called you, that you may make known to me what I should do." Now the fact that Saul answered the apparition and said, "I am greatly distressed because you brought me up," and if it was Samuel, that would mean brought Samuel up to earth from heaven. And so he's saying, "I was in heaven and now I'm distressed because you brought me up." Well, no witch has the power to disturb a departed saint in heaven. So this is an argument. This is a demon masquerading as Saul. This apparition of Samuel says, "God has departed from me and no longer answers me." This is another argument that this is a fake Samuel. If this was the real Samuel, Saul would be crazy to think that since God had abandoned him, Samuel would not also abandon him. But here he is asking Samuel for help, so why would Saul think that Samuel would be helping him? He must be facing a demon. In fact, Matthew Henry and John Gill say that Saul knew it was a demon he was talking to. I'm not sure about that argument. Even though I do believe it was a demon, I'm not sure Saul knew that he was talking to a demon. But at any rate, the apparition says, "I am distressed. I am disturbed, I should say. Saul is distressed because the Philistines are coming after him." Now Saul says, "Prophets and dreams are not bringing me answers from Yahweh anymore." He didn't mention Urim and Thummim. That could be because of Abiathar, the surviving priest of the priest at Nob, those priests who were slaughtered en masse at Saul's direction. Abiathar had taken it to David's camp, and maybe Saul's too ashamed to mention that because he had slain all those priests. We go now to 1 Samuel 28, verses 16 through 19. Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has departed from you and has become your adversary?" Good question. "The Lord has done accordingly as he spoke through me," the apparition says, "for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, to David. As you did not obey the Lord and did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, so the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also give over Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. Therefore, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Indeed, the Lord will give over the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines." Now, the apparition said that the Lord has departed from you, Saul, become your adversary. Now, here's another argument. It's a weak argument that this is a demon speaking, not Samuel. John Gill says that Samuel will have urged Saul to repent in order not to be destroyed. I don't think so. Samuel could have just said, "It's over, Saul. Your cup of iniquity is filled up." I mean, several times God told prophets there's no use in praying. For example, Jeremiah, remember? He's praying for Israel. "No, it's over, Jeremiah. I'm going to bring the Babylonians in and wipe out the Israelites." And I could imagine a real Samuel saying, "I'm not going to ask you to repent, Saul. It's a waste of my time." So that's not a good argument. Even though it's not a good argument for the proposition that the apparition is a demon and not the real Samuel. I believe it was a demon, but I don't think this is a good argument to prove it. Now, the apparition mentions the event in Saul and Samuel's relationship when the Lord tore the kingdom out of Saul's hand. Remember, at the second time at Gilgal, when Saul had failed to kill Agag, the Amalekite king, Samuel said, "I've had it with you." He walks away. He was on his way to Gilgal, probably never even got there, turned around and walked out, and Saul went running after him on the outskirts of Gilgal and said, "Hold on, Saul," grabbed his cloak, tore off a piece. Samuel looks at the torn off piece and says, "Oh, what a good object lesson for a prophet. The kingdom has been torn from you, Saul." And so that's what the apparition is referring to here. "The kingdom torn from you, Saul, and given to your neighbor, to David." You know, that same David that you've been chasing. Verse 18, "As you did not obey the Lord and did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, That would be in 1 Samuel 15:9. But Saul and the people spared Agag, who's the king of the Amalekites, and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were not willing to destroy them utterly. Destroy utterly means cherem, put them under cherem. Not willing to destroy them utterly, but everything despised and worthless that they utterly destroyed. In other words, they let the choice stuff last, escape destruction, because that stuff was valuable, and they were going to make use of it. They were greedy, and Saul was greedy too. And he was probably going to ransom the king back with the Amalekites. Once you king back, give me some money. Now this apparition in verse 18 says, because you didn't obey the Lord and didn't execute Amalek, so you're going to lose to the Philistines. Now the apparition did not say you're going to lose not only because of not killing Amalek, but because you made counsel of a medium. But in 1 Chronicles 10:13, we read this. So Saul died for his trespass, which he committed against the Lord, because of the word of the Lord, which he did not keep. That's Agag, king of Amalekites, king of the Amalekites, whom he did not kill, because of the word of the Lord, which he did not keep. And also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it. So the scripture clearly says the reason Saul died is because he asked counsel of a medium. But it's interesting that this apparition of Samuel didn't mention that. I think he didn't mention it because he was a demon himself. Didn't want to bring up some unpleasantness. Verse 19, the apparition says, Saul, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Well, that could be a false prophecy, or it could be he's just said some sons, because not all of Saul's sons died in the battle. There were three that survived, Ishbosheth and two sons of Saul by Rizpah, one of his wives. So John Gill says, this sounds like the demon's making a false prophecy. Maybe, maybe not. He might have been referring to some other sons that died. He would need one more besides Jonathan. Actually, I don't have that at the tip of my fingers here, if it was another son that died. I just looked it up, and Saul, as a matter of fact, had six sons, and three of them survived. So that means three of them had to have been killed in battle. And so that means that technically this apparition is not making a false prophecy. So we won't use that argument to say that it's a demon instead of Samuel. Now, tomorrow, the apparition says, your sons will be with me. That means after they're dead. Now, where is that? Well, that depends on whether this apparition is the true Saul or a demon Saul. If it's a demon, Saul would be in hell with a demon. And Saul's sons would be in hell, too. Oh, but what about Jonathan? He was a righteous man. He's going to be in hell? That's a problem. Well, you can make it not a problem by saying, well, the demon is just impersonating Samuel. It's no big deal that he would say Saul's sons would be in heaven. He's lying. Some would be in heaven, Jonathan, and some might be in hell with Saul. Now, if it's the true Samuel and he says, tomorrow you'll be with me, in that case, Samuel is just referring to Hades. You're going to be dead tomorrow. The shadowy realm of the dead, not necessarily heaven, could be hell too. Adam Clark agrees with that. He says, does not this mean that they were to go to paradise, which means Hades? I suppose it means no more than they should all die. In other words, tomorrow you're all going to die. Your sons are going to die. And that's as far as we need to go with that. We don't need to worry about Saul's eternal state. I doubt it's not very pleasant. But I don't know. I'm not going to judge. I don't know whether Saul got, whether he was saved and just acted like a horse's rear for the rest of his life. I don't know. I know some Christians that have fallen into that category, but I'll never say they're not saved, because Jesus is actually able to forgive some really nasty people. His blood is amazingly powerful in that respect. Now, this apparition says, Yahweh will give over the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines tomorrow. But John Gill says it wasn't tomorrow. He cites 1 Samuel 28:23, which has absolutely nothing to do with tomorrow, unless it's a mistypographical error somewhere. So I'm not going to stand on that. I'm going to assume the battle was tomorrow and that John Gill's off base there. We go down to 1 Samuel 28, verses 20 through 22. Then Saul immediately fell full length upon the ground and was very afraid because of the words of Samuel. Also there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day and all night. The woman came to Saul, that's the witch, came to Saul and saw that he was terrified and said to him, behold, your maidservant has obeyed you. Your maidservant, of course, is referring to her, the witch of Endor, has obeyed you, and I have taken my life in my hand and have listened to your words which you spoke to me. So now also, please listen to the voice of your maidservant, and let me set a piece of bread before you that you may eat and have strength when you go on your way. Now, why is Saul not eating any food? Because he's on the eve of his final battle. He realizes he's toast. The Philistines are going to beat him. He's weak because of fear and hunger. You don't feel like eating when you're scared to death and when you're Well, you feel like eating when you're hungry, but you don't feel like eating when you're scared. Now, some people, well, me actually, have made a suggestion that maybe Saul was fasting for victory. That's really putting a good spin on it. I don't think so. I think he was just lost his appetite because of fear. Now, verse 21, the woman is said to come to Saul. She came to Saul. So where was she when she came to Saul? She probably had withdrawn at the first appearance of the apparition, Adam Clark says. In other words, she saw Samuel, the apparition, and says, whoa, I'm out of here, and heads to another room. Could be, but that's speculation. The woman tells Saul, I have taken my life in my hand by giving you this, by performing this medium service for you. How is she taking her life in her hand? Because Saul had an outstanding edict. Banish all mediums. And plus, she probably knew the law says you practice witchcraft, familiar spirits, and all that kind of stuff, you're subject to death. But I think Saul didn't really threaten to kill. I just finished saying it in this same audio. He didn't threaten to kill the mediums. He threatened to export them, expel them. But the law said that they were to be executed, killed, as that verse that I read you earlier in the law. So the woman continues speaking to Saul, and she says, let me set a piece of bread before you. Why was the witch so anxious to feed Saul? Well, Adam Clark says it's because the witch of Endor had a genuine concern for the king of Israel. John Gill says it was because she was afraid for her own life. It would be real bad for the king to die in her house, and she's a witch? Ooh. She might be exposed as a witch, and then people are going to take the next step. A witch? You put a curse on him, and you killed him. So she's scared to death. She's trying to keep the old boy alive. We go down to 1 Samuel 28, verses 23 to 25, and we'll finish this chapter. He, that Saul, refused, saying, I won't eat. But when his servants and the woman urged him, he listened to them. He got off the ground and sat on the bed. The woman had probably to eat. The woman had a fattened calf at her house, and she quickly slaughtered it. She also took flour, kneaded it, and baked unleavened bread. She served it to Saul and his servants, and they ate. Afterward, they got up and left that night. Now again, Saul says, I'm not going to eat. I won't eat. I think he would rather die of hunger than die at the hand of the Philistines. Depressed people don't want to eat, and he's depressed. But the woman had a fattened calf there, and that's a delicacy. Calf that's been, I guess, grain-fed to make it bigger and bigger so it tastes good when they ate it. It's not ordinary food. But she's with a king, even though he's a sicko king. He's still a king, so she baked the slaughtered the fattened calf and prepared it. You might ask, why did she have a fattened calf at her house? Adam Clark tells us why. Quote, the ancients used great dispatch in their cookery. In hot countries, they could not keep flesh meat by them any length of time. Hence, they generally kept young animals, such as calves, lambs, and kids, ready for slaughter. And when there was occasion, one of them was killed and dressed immediately. This thing about keeping animals outside instead of in your house, that's a modern invention. There's nothing wrong with keeping an animal in your house. I mean, we keep dogs and cats in our houses all the time. So what's the difference between that and a little cow? And she cooked unleavened bread because there was no time to bake leavened bread. It takes time for the leaven to make the bread rise. So she fixed, this witch did, a nice meal for Saul. He ate, got his strength back, and headed back south back to his camp at Gilboa. And that finishes up this chapter. We're ready now to go to chapter 29, short chapter, verses 1 through 11. And we're going to go back to David, and we see that the Philistines are going to reject David. I hope you stay tuned for that, and I hope you enjoy this audio.